It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast. Normally, we have a 25-minute roundtable discussion, but this week, we have a special guest. Our first guest on the First and 25 podcast, three-time Super Bowl referee, Bernie Kukar. Welcome, Bernie.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Right. I'm happy to be here, and if anything you want to know that I can add to it, I certainly will. So if you want to start with...
Well, okay, so we got a lot of ground to cover and only 25 minutes to do it, so we'll start right off the bat. We'll go to your Super Bowl in after the 2001 season, and that was the first major national event after 9/11. So it was the first game in our country's history to be designated a national security event. So I'm sure that whole experience, that whole Super Bowl experience being just a few months removed from the terrorist attacks was quite different from your perspective.
It certainly was. It certainly was that. You could not believe the security that was involved in this thing. As you say, this was right after 9/11, and they were really concerned that somebody's going to try to blow up that stadium. And so you couldn't go any place without four forms of identification. And usually the NFL has their own security department for the Super Bowls. But in this one, it was the Secret Service that was doing the security. And we couldn't go anywhere without four forms of identification. And I'll tell you what, and all these guys, and you can spot them, the Secret Service guys, they were all about 6'2", 6'3", weighed about 210 pounds. They all had an ear device on. So you know who they were. But in any event, I had to tell you this story. My son was a senior in college at that time, and he was coming down because he was playing football yet, and they had some kind of a game going on. In any event, he came in late, and I stopped at the desk that we were in a hotel we were staying at, and I told him he's going to show up and give him a ticket, or give him a key, I should say, to get into my room. And so he did, and that's what they did. And he goes up the room and opens the door with that key, and standing in the room was one of these Secret Service guys. And he looked at my son, not a small guy. He himself is about 6'1", 6'2", weighs about 215 pounds. Anyway, the guy says to him, "Well, what group are you with?" And he says, "The officials." And the guy says, "I think you got the wrong room. You best go check that out." So he goes down to the desk and found out, yeah, they had given the wrong room to the key to the wrong room, I should say. And that's how it started. But boy, I'll tell you, it was really something. I've never seen that much security. I've been involved with three Super Bowls, and I have never seen it that bad or that good, I should say. Once the game started, you know, usually they tell us beforehand who's going to be the dignitaries that are doing the coin flip. And this time they didn't, so we didn't know what was going on. So we're just standing there when we come out to actually do the coin toss, and I just looked around and didn't see anybody to speak of, and all of a sudden I look over the sidelines, and there they're standing, Roger Staubach and George Bush Sr. So, okay, I tell them, you got to come out at a certain time for TV, because this is all, you know, according to the television, what they tell us to do. So they do come out there, and I said, "Okay, Mr. President, you stand here to my left, and Roger, you stand here to my right." And he said, okay. I said, "And Mr. President, you're going to do the coin flip." And he looked at me and he says, "No, I'm not." And I said, "Yes, you are." And he said, "No, I'm not." And I said, "The NFL tells me you have to do the coin flip." He said, "I'm not going to do it." So I'm sitting there thinking, here's a guy from the swamps of northern Minnesota trying to tell the President of the United States what to do. Maybe I better back off of this one. So I did. And I said, "All right, if you're not going to do it, who's going to do it?" He said, "Roger will do it." And sure enough, Roger did it. At least we got the coin flip done right. And that's how that game started.
And with all that, the security there, you know, you got someone from the Secret Service that's not going to let you trifle with the president. And in his case, the dignitary for that game was Roger Staubach to him. So that was interesting how that worked out. And then he did wind up doing the coin flip a couple decades later with Barbara Bush, I remember.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, I'm just going to say, interestingly enough, that game, if you recall, you remember the game?
I do. Yes, it was very close. And
That was the Patriots' first Super Bowl win. And guess who the quarterback, guess who the quarterback was? Tom Brady. Yeah. And if you recall, maybe you do or maybe you don't, that he actually wasn't even a starter that year. Drew Bledsoe was. But about the, I don't know, sixth game of the year or so, Bledsoe got injured. He basically caved his chest in, kind of thing. And so that's when Brady took over. And then I had that first game that he was the starting quarterback. And as it turns out, that was the first win that the Patriots had. And that started a string of, what, six or seven events that they did get into. But I have to tell you this story because it's really an interesting end to this thing. There was only about a minute and 30 seconds left in the game, and it was a tie score. And they were playing the Rams, if I remember correctly. Tie score, and a minute 30, and Denver ends up, it wasn't Denver, it was Rams. The Rams ended up on their own, going into a score for the winning touchdown. Well, they didn't make it, so now the Patriots take over, and Brady moves them down the field, right into field goal range. And of course, there's a timeout for TV purposes, and the kicker is coming in to kick the game-winning kick. And it was that kicker, from South Dakota State he was playing at, Adam Vinatieri. And I knew South Dakota State quite well because in college I worked at conference, and South Dakota State was called the North Central Conference up there in the Dakotas and Minnesota and Iowa. So he comes trotting out there, and I said to him, of course, this is a timeout, and I don't have my mic on. So I said to him, you know, Adam, if you miss this kick, Stan Marshall is going to kick your butt. Stan Marshall was the athletic director at South Dakota State, so I knew him quite well. He said, how do you know Stan Marshall? I said, I worked your league for 12 years before I got to the NFL. And he looks at me and says, it's going through. And sure enough, it did go through. Game's over. Brady wins first Super Bowl.
That's right. And I remember they had a close-up now at the bottom of the goalpost there, and it was the official had 135 on his back, and that was Pete Morelli.
Yes, exactly. Well, then I think a couple months, a couple months later, Sports Illustrated had a picture of that exact play. I got it right here in my office now, and I called them up, and I said, do you have a copy of that you could send to me? And sure enough, they did send it to me. I've got it right in my office here, where it shows, and I'm very ready to kick, and I'm looking, and the scoreboard is there. You can see there's only like 6 seconds left up there, and it shows the score. It's really a nice picture, so I was really happy that they did that for me.
That's great. I want to go back before, I can't remember which Super Bowl it was, but I think it was a little bit of an assignment issue where the Vikings were in the playoffs that year, and you being from Minnesota, they thought up at the league office that was too much of a conflict, and that got resolved not only because the Vikings didn't make it to the Super Bowl, but I think that kind of was the last time that became an issue.
Exactly right. I can tell you exactly what happened. Jerry Seaman was the supervisor of officials at that time, and he called me up, and he said, well, you're the number one rated referee, and you're going to the Super Bowl, except if the Vikings get in there, you're not going to Super Bowl. I can't send you down there, and you know that. I said, yeah, I know that. Well, in any event, I'm watching this game with Atlanta and Minnesota, and it was up in Minnesota. They have a kicker for Minnesota. Hadn't missed a field goal or an extra point the whole season. So he's lining up to do this to get him to the Super Bowl. And I said to my wife, Mary, forget it. We're not going anyplace. Well, guess what? He does miss it. I jumped out of the chair, and I said, pack it up. We're going to the Super Bowl. And I was the only, I guarantee you, I was the only guy in Minnesota rooting for Atlanta that day.
But after that, was there any kind of discussion after that?
That was Atlanta and that was Denver. And if you recall, this was Elway's last game. He was retiring after this game. So they were doing a job on Atlanta, and about the middle of the third quarter, he finally gets nailed, and he's laying down on the ground, and he's yelling at me, Bernie, that was a late hit. And he said to him, John, that's the only time they hit you all day. And he goes, you're right, I owe you a beer. So I bring that up because I have to fast forward this. Now, I haven't seen or talked to him because that was his last game, and he went into retirement. And then we have a place out in Vail, Colorado that we go out to quite often for skiing purposes. And all of a sudden, about, I don't know how many years ago, 7 or 8, he opens up a supper club right in Vail. So I wasn't doing nothing one day. I wasn't skiing, so I decided I'm going to go into the supper club and see what's going on. So I did. And this is kind of before the ski day was over, so it'd be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Was kind of empty in there with hardly anybody in there, just a bartender, basically. So I went up to that bartender and I said, I'd like to have a beer. I said, okay. So he puts the beer on the counter. I said, put that in Elway's tab. He goes, what? I said, yeah, he owes me a beer and I'm here to collect it. He said, what are you talking about? And I had my Super Bowl ring on at the time. So I took it off and I showed it to him. On it has the date and my time. My name is on there and the whole thing is right on his ring. And he goes, what, you sure? Just then the manager walks by, and he says, what's going on? So I tell him. He says, who are you? So I told him. So if Elway ever comes in here, which he probably does once a year to probably using his name, tell him I collected that beer. So that was kind of the end of the story of that one.
So that's great, because I don't know how many times I've had somebody that has said that they'd get me a beer the next time that they saw me, and I have a lot of those adding up. You were able to cash in your chip right away there. So I just want to go back to that assignment in particular. It was actually because of the Vikings not being in that game. But did that policy hang around much longer, or was that the end of when they were going to enforce that?
Well, I'm the one that brought that up when the season was over. We had a lot of communication with the league office through till the whole league starts up again the following year. And I brought that up to him. I said, how fair is that? I had the best game of my career. And because the Vikings are playing, you won't let me do the Super Bowl? That makes absolutely no sense. And I did raise hell about that with our officials association. And they took it from there. And lo and behold, the league saw that was not fair. And so they disband that situation entirely. And I still think it's to the point where it doesn't make any difference. And, you know, we used to be, when I first got in the league, that we couldn't work any of our hometown games. Well, that lasted for about a couple of years, because when you try to take, we have 119 officials, and on my crew, they're all from different places. So if you try to keep everybody out of their hometown, there's no way you could schedule anybody. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. So they finally got away from that, and that was because of that situation in that particular Super Bowl.
And it makes a lot of sense, as you say. You're the highest-rated official that particular year. Why would you skip it over for something arbitrary if, you know, you're supposed to be there because of your impartiality? So why would that impartiality be in question at all? But
yeah, most of the time, we're at these games, and you don't know even what town you're in sometimes. All you know is the dark shirts and the white shirts when you're down on the field, and that's all you should know. And that's exactly how it should be. So I raised that fuss a bit about it. Fortunately, they saw the bright side of it and took that off. And I still think today it's still the same way, that they don't have that restriction anymore.
Yeah, that's completely off at this point. Yeah, and nobody's even giving it a second thought anymore. I want to go back to another game that comes up every once in a while. And it's actually a little bit unfortunate on your end, because it was a game where you got injured. But it was something that we saw again this season when referee Adrian Hill went down. And there was a close-up shot of him handing off his white hat to Brandon Ellison, the umpire, to substitute for him. But that happened to you, and you wound up handing that off to somebody by the name of Gene Steratore.
Exactly right. This was his first year in the league. And before the season starts, when we get together down in Dallas for the training camp, basically, and we have time, that's when you already have your crew assigned to you. So usually they make one or two changes for each crew. And so Gene was just coming into the league this year. And I used to tell Seaman every year, give me a rookie every single year. And I'll tell you within three games if he's going to be worth a darn or not. So he would kind of do that. This one happened to be Steratore. Well, then I look around the room when we're at the clinic and I say, all these other guys, none of them have ever been a referee except Gene in college. So I have to point a guy that's going to replace me if I go down in the regular season, because you have to have a referee. Now, during the regular season, if one of our other officials gets hurt, one of the other six, we just go with six guys instead of seven. So we don't even have an alternate. But they changed that, too. Now they have alternates for every game, I think. But in any event, we go through the whole season, and nothing happens, so we don't have to worry about it. Here we are, though, up in New York, and that's when the Giants were a pretty good team. And I think they were playing, I'm not sure who they're
Carolina.
Carolina. There you go. In any event, the game is going well. In about the middle of the third quarter, the Giants block a punt. Now, normally as a referee, all the action is moving away from you. But sometimes when things change, it's like with a block punt or an interception, then everything's coming at you. And I'm the only guy back now. All the rest of them are way downfield. So the ball is bouncing around. And the Giants keep diving at it. And I'm figuring this is going to go in the end zone. It's either going to be a touchdown or it's going to be a safety. Well, the last guy from the Giants bats it sideways. And I'm standing actually on the sidelines at this point watching the thing go on. And he bats it. And I'm standing pretty close to where that ball is coming. So I turn around, move back a little. And I watch where the ball is going out of bounds. And all of a sudden, the lights go out. Somebody drilled me right in the middle of my back. One of the Giant players, you can see it on the film, he lowered his head about 5 yards from me and just drilled me right in the center of my back. And I went down. I could hardly move my head. I'm laying there moaning because they hadn't got the wind knocked out of me. And I stuck out my arm to break my fall. And I think I kind of sprained the shoulder and sprained ankle in the process, and I'm laying there moaning, and I'm saying, and by this time there's 15 doctors around there because they all saw it on the sidelines, and here comes Steratore running down there, and I'm trying to get in my breath, and I'm going, Gino, take my white hat. He yells, I'm not taking that white hat. His eyes are about the size of tennis balls. I said, Gino, take the damn hat. He said, I'm not taking that hat. And finally, I had to throw in an expletive deleted in there. Take that frickin' hat. All the doctors looked at
me. You
better take his hat. So they haul me off in a golf cart, and I'm in the locker room, and I got the trainer over there. I said to him, you got to tape up my shoulder, and you got to tape up my ankle, because I don't know what Steratore is going to do. He's a rookie, and this is a pretty critical game for the Giants. I don't think Carolina was in it at that point. So the Giants, if they win, they get home field advantage or something to that effect. In any event, the phone rings, and it's Pereira. He says, how you doing? I said, well, I'm alive, but I can't really move my head, and I'm getting taped up. You taped up for what? I said, I don't know what Steratore is going to do. I might have to go back out there. And he said, you're not going out there. I said, I don't care what you say. If I don't like what I see on this television, I'm going out there. And he goes, you can't. And I said, why not? Because I need you next week in the playoffs. That's the first time I ever got a playoff assignment in the locker room of the stadium. And that was Steratore's very first refereeing experience in the NFL. And then I have to add a little bit to this. When they had the Super Bowl in Minnesota, he was the referee for that game. And this is, I don't know, what, 5-6 years ago now? And he was thinking about retiring because he's having trouble with his back or something. And I told him at that time, I said, Gino, you got to quit work. He worked all like 5 different Division I basketball games in a week. He was kind of hurting about that. And I says, they're not paying you for all 5 games that you're getting in one game in the NFL. Are you crazy? get the heck out of there. And he said, I'm just going to get through the season. So I talked him out of it. So he, and anyway, when you have the Super Bowl, the Thursday night, the officiating crews and all their family members have a big function. And they introduce the officials for the Super Bowl. The guy that's running it, the associate, the head of the officials, will introduce them all. But he, and it was Torber, who the heck took over? I can't remember his name. Anyway, he asked me if I would introduce Gino. So there's like 150 people in the place, and it's in Minnesota. And I'm the one that set up the hotel for him to do that. And so I go through this whole scenario that I just went through with you. Gino was sliding down in his chair as I tell this story. He said, why did you have to do that? I said, because your family and the rest of the officials' family have to know how you got to start in this league. And to this day, when he's on the CBS games and he'll say something on television, I'll text him right away and say, Gino, that's not right. You're not right on that one. And he texts me back. He'll say, yeah, but don't tell anybody. So we still stay in pretty close contact.
I want to take you back to 2001. Now, you knew Coach Brian Billick before you were both in the NFL, going way back. And you had a situation where there was a game-ending encroachment penalty. Well, you can't end the game on an encroachment penalty because that means there was no snap and you have to put time back on the clock. Billick didn't understand that. You were trying to explain to him that he was actually going to benefit from this. And various accounts said, you said something to the effect of, hey, Billick, you dumb bastard. I'm trying to explain this to you. I don't know exactly what's said. You can tell us exactly what happened there, but I'd love to hear what happened on the field.
The way the whole thing happened is Tennessee, it's towards the end of the game. Tennessee's got time for like one or two more plays, and they're down by 6 points. So there's a long, long pass. Everybody's running down her before the clock expires, and they all get together, and the quarterback at that time was a fellow that unfortunately was murdered a few years from there, and he lines up, gets the ball, dives across the goal line, and the place is going wild. They're thinking, all they got to do now is kick the extra point, and the game is over. Well, that was fine, and I signal touchdown. All of a sudden, one of my head linesmen comes running in there, and he says, I've got a penalty. And now we've got no time on the clock, and he comes running in there and saying, you got a penalty? Yeah. I said, it better be on the defense. He said, yeah, it was. I said, well, that's easy. All I'll do is just say, penalty on the defense, decline, extra points good, game's over. And he goes, no, it wasn't that way. I said, what way was it? He said, well, when everybody's running down the field and trying to get on the other side of the ball, the guys that were the defensive linemen try to get on their side of the line of scrimmage. He had a push. He pushed the center out of the way, and he pushed the guard out of the way to do that. And that is actually a fall right there. So I say, oh, man, you got to be kidding me. So you know what you have to do then. There's no time on the clock, and the offense will get the ball back. We mark off half the goal, half the distance to the goal line, and redo the play because the play really never went off. And there's no time left on the clock, so it's just untimed down. Well, Billick is over there jumping up and down and screaming and hollering. I go, he wants to see me, so go running over. I said, Billick, I know there's a TV camera on here. You like that? And he said, yeah, I do. But he says, this, you can't do that. I says, do what? He said, the game is over. I says, no, it isn't. The play didn't go off. He said, well, you didn't give us time to get on the other side of the ball. I said, we don't have to. He said, well, your guy didn't put the ball down fast enough. I said, yes, he did. And he said, well, there was a false start. And I said, Billick, you idiot. If we don't do what we're doing right now, you are going to lose this game. And he goes, ah, I knew you were right all along. That is Billick. And they went. That's the year they went to the Super Bowl, I believe. So that was an interesting finish to quite a season there.
And that's the First and 25 podcast. Many thanks to Bernie Kukar for joining us this episode. Catch us on your favorite podcasting platform. I'm Ben Ostro. Many thanks for listening.